play that, Health, the Trouble Monk? I'll put it on there. This is February 6th, 1988. Ernie Carpenter playing the fiddle and Jerry Mills playing the banjo, and this is Trouble Among the Yearlings. This is Dan Friend's piece, the Jolly Blacksmith. The Jolly Blacksmith. Ernie Carpenter playing the fiddle. Thank you.
But Sam Iger played it, and Ed Williams played it, and Luke Williams played it, and Ed Clutter played it. Not Ed, Charlie Clutter. Charlie Clutter played it.
Where was he from? Charlie Clutter. Hmm? Where was Charlie Clutter from?
Charlie lived down Sutton over on the other side of the river there, down next to the what used to be the old ice plant. Lived down on the other side of the river there. Just a little ways down, after you cross the bridge, just a little ways down the railroad, the old railroad track there. Charlie lived there. He worked at the ice plant for years. And like I told you before, I've seen him sit and play for many a dance by himself. And he played Jimmy Johnson. And that's the only tune he played. He played it all night long, or long as a dance. That one tune,
that was
by himself.
That was Clutter, Charlie Clutter.
Charlie Clutter. He played Jimmy Johnson, that's the tune he played. So only tune he played, but today, if you go out today and start playing for a square dance and just play one tune and just keep playing it, why, most of the dancers would be complaining about, why don't you play something else? But they didn't then. Uh-huh. And now and then, about the only break that Charlie had, why, now and then Dan Prenwood, the blacksmith, he would take over and play maybe a couple of sets and rest Charlie. But he'd sit there, and part of the time you'd think he was asleep. He sat there with his eyes shut, but he's never lost he never missed a note. All night long as they danced, boy, that's the only thing. Nobody played with him.
Would Dan Friend play that tune for a dance?
Dan?
Yeah. Would he play that tune there?
Yeah.
To dance to? I don't know if I didn't. I was wondering whether it would be a dance tune or not.
As well as I remember, they danced by it quite often. They danced by it any time that Dan played the fiddle, because he didn't ask them what they played. He played what he wanted to play, and that was his favorite tune. Two nights, that was his favorite tune, and he'd play that. The way they danced it, it looked good.
Who was Ed Williams? I don't think I ever heard you mention him.
Ed Williams was, there were two of them, probably three of them, Ed and Luke, and can't think of his name right now, but Ed was, I think, the oldest boy. He played the fiddle. He's a pretty doggone good fiddler. And Luke was a pretty good fiddler. Luke had got I believe it was these two fingers. I believe it was, or maybe all three of them fingers. I know he cut the bow with his thumb and his little finger there. Dad used to say, well, when Luke gets that little finger hooked around that fiddle bow, you can't pull him loose. And he had an accident and cutting timber and got hit with an axe. Done with the axe or saw, I don't remember now. But anyway, they both of them were good fiddlers. And Ab was the other boy. Ed, Ab, and Luke. And Luke was, and Ed both, they'd go once in a while and play for dances. And they made good dance music. They played the average old time tune, you know, like we play, same thing. Mm-hmm. And Luke, they both liked to play. And Ed, I never did get around where him and Tom Dillon was together, because they both were turned just exactly alike. Mm-hmm. Ed thought he was the world's best fiddler, and when he was on the scene, he did the playing. And I just wondered how him and how Tom and Ed made out when they got together. They were good friends. and did play together a lot of times, but I never did get to hear them both play at the same time. And, Ed thought he was the best, and Tom thought he was the best. Tom, when he made that tape that he's already got, Tom had began to fail at that time. He never got a chance to make a tape or a record or anything like that when he was younger, you know. But when Tom made that tape, he wasn't the fiddler that he was before that. Because he used to come to our house quite often, and from time to time that he'd come to our house, even though I couldn't play very much myself, of course, I was concerned. I could tell the difference in Tom's playing from time to time that he'd long towards the last few times that he was out of our place. I could notice a big difference in his playing and what he played the first time. I know the first contest that they ever had in Sutton, that was the courthouse, and Tom was just a young fellow then, 22 or 3 years old. Tom was, in his younger days, he dressed pretty nice, and really always wore a full suit, and was a good-looking man when he was a young fella. And so Dad went down to the contest. Of course, he knew Tom, he knew his dad, he knew the whole family, and he knew, of course, Jack Wayne real well, and Bill Stutler, and all the rest of them played in, and there was a Kaufman. I forget his first name. He was a good old-time fiddler. He played in it, and Burton. You've heard of Turk Burton, and Jake Burton. Turk was a pretty good fiddler himself, and his dad, I never did get to hear him play, but his dad, my dad said, was an awful good old-time fiddler, and he played in the contest down there. And Dad was one of the judges. Dad and Dr. Dick Brown, they wanted Dad to be one of the judges, and he told him he didn't want no part of it because all them fellows were good friends of his, and he said, regardless of who you give it to, or the others will feel that they ought to have it. They said, I don't want no part of it, but they couldn't get nobody else, you know, that really was qualified to be a judge, anybody that really knows music, you know. So they just come around there and just drug him out there and said, now you, and they went and got Dr. Dick Brown. Of course, Dr. Dick didn't know one tune from another. But Doc was just a everyday somebody. He was just, he said, Doc, let's go out and steal chicken tonight. Well, Doc, go along with you. Anything like that. He was a fine doctor and a fine person, but he was just a person that would just take part in anything. You'd think, you know, being a doctor, why, he wouldn't want to do things, you know, like that, but it was all fun to him. So they got him, Dad and him, and, who was the third man? I didn't know, but I can't think now, but anyway, so when they give the judge, when they give the prizes, well, of course, they wasn't but two prizes to judge, and that was second and third, like I said, when Jack Wayne played in the contest, why, there wasn't no judging to be made. So, of course, Jack got first prize, and they give Bill Stutler. Bill Stutler, he was a close relation. I don't know whether he was a brother to Eamon down here at Lower Fork, has them tombstones along there. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether he was Eamon's brother or not, but I think he was. But anyway, they were close related, whichever. But I think he was Eamon's brother, Bill Stutler. And Dad said, now I'll tell you right now, he said, some of the tunes that he played that were daggone close to Uncle Jack's style. And of course, Tom got third. And like I say, Tom was young then and a good looking man. Dad came back home and he was talking about it and said, if you went by popularity, he said, of course, Tom would have walked away with the first prize easy because it's got all the young people around there, you know, that didn't really know what old time music was all about. Oh, so they thought that Tom ought to have the first prize. They thought that Tom was the best fiddler that was there because he was young, you know, and well-dressed and good-looking, and all the young people, you know, especially the girls, they went for him. And Dad knew music, and he put it where it belonged. It didn't make no difference who it went to. Like I say, of course, when Uncle Jack was in the contest, you only had two people to judge, out of second and third. There wasn't no first prize to judge because it was Uncle Jack was just so much better than anybody else. My goodness, it was like listening to me play and listening to Clark Chessinger or somebody like that.
What was that? I think you told it up there in Elkins about. Was it the first contest you played in when you got home and your dad?
The first contest I played in, yeah, I played the first contest I played in was Clay Courthouse.
Was that the one where your dad wanted the money? He got the money for the taxes or something?
He what?
Was that the time when your dad needed the money to pay the taxes? Or?
Yeah, that was it.
How did that go?
Yeah, that was it. The first contest I played in.
And what happened?
Courthouse. The first prize was $15. And God, you couldn't have been anybody more surprised than I told you about when I hitchhiked a ride down to Clay that day. I don't know where getting down there. We had the platform down there at the fairground, and the county agents from down Clay County. He was a young fella, heck of a nice somebody. And he come around there on the platform on the last night of the fair, and he said, next Saturday night, he said, we're having an old-time fiddler's contest at Clay Courthouse, and we're going to look for you there. And I said, well, my friend, I won't be there because I ain't got any way in the first place of getting there, and in the second place, I don't have any business there. He said, we're going to look for you down there. And I said, you just keep that in mind. We're going to expect you down there for that contest. And he said, there'll be some way you can get down there. So I got to inquire around and found out that Pike James, Pike and I were a good friend, John Gillespie. Pike had borrowed a car. Back in them days, you don't see much of that anymore, but back in them days, if you had no right to drive a car, you'd loan it to a friend to go someplace, make a trip in. He'd handle it just like he was young, as far as that's concerned. Pike had borrowed a car off of some fella down at Clay Courthouse that he was down there, and he didn't have any way of getting home, and he borrowed that fella's car to get home. So he had to take it back, and he happened to be going down on that day. So he let me out just right at the upper part of the main part of Clay there. Just down the street a little ways, there was just a hotel and restaurant on the ground floor and hotel rooms upstairs. And I took my fiddle under my arm and walked down the street. There's two boys sitting in a window there, something like the Home National Bank down here, where they sit in. Two boys there. As I walked by, one of them said, boy, he said, they're the worst looking fiddler I ever saw. And the other one said, just as earnest, you know, and the other one said back to him, I was listening, you know, the other one said back to him, said, yeah, but you can't go with looks. Said, he just might win first prize. So it turned out I did win first prize. I never did. If I'd have known where to look for them boys, I'd have went and hunted for them, but I didn't know who they were. But I bet they laughed when they heard about the prize. And so I went down there to the hotel, and I asked that fellow to hotel after the contest was over. I had no way of getting back home. And so I had enough money to pay for my room, I think. Charged me $1, I believe it was, for the room, well as I remember. And I asked him about any room. I said, I live in Sutton. I can't get home tonight. And he said, well, I've got a room upstairs. He said, two beds, John. But he said, there's one fellow there. He said, he's one of the jurymen here. The court was going on there at that time. And he said, he's one of the jurymen here. And he said, he's an all right fella. And he said, you don't need to be worry about anything like that. And he said, well, the bed's empty. I said, okay. So he took me up and showed me how I am. Never even turned the light on. There's enough light shining in from the street through the window. I didn't want to wake him up. And I was very quiet. I could see the bed, you know, and see him. He was in the bed on the right-hand side and left-hand bed next to the street. The one was empty. And I put my fiddle, slid my fiddle back under the bed, and very quietly took my clothes off and went to bed. By the time I got stretched out there, I thought, you know, he was asleep. He was awake all the time. And he turned over and he said, was you at the contest? And I said, yeah. And he said, boy, that fellow there had that old, I had that old fiddle, of course, then. He said, boy, that fellow there, he said, it had that old fiddle. He said, boy, that was a good sounding fiddle. He said, won first prize. And I said, yeah. I said, that's a good fiddle. Yeah, he said, that's a good sounding fiddle. And I said, I've got it right here. Oh, I said, are you the fellow on first prize? Dark in the orange is what the street light was shining, you know. And I said, yeah, guess I was the lucky one. I turned over there, I just on the side of the bed there, and I laid down. He kept talking, and he said, where'd you get that fiddle? I started asking questions about it. I said, well, it's my father's old, wasn't my father's old fiddle. Well, I started playing, he gave it to me. I said, been in the family for way over 100 years. And he said, boy, he said, yeah. I said, are you on a jury here? He said, what? I said, you on a jury? Oh, I said, heck no, I'm a horse trader. I thought, Jim, said, I trade horses. Said, during court time down here, he said, we do a lot of horse trading. Well, they used to do the same thing down here at 7. That back street there, it wasn't even paved in. It was just dirt. And it would get so bad in the wintertime, they'd go around, well, they'd usually go down to the ice plant. They fired that ice plant that they had down there. It was cold. And they just wheeled the cinders out there and dumped them. They'd go down and haul in cinders from that old ice plant up and put them on the back street. Mm-hmm. Oh, just load after load of them. And he said, yeah, I said, I'm... And they, during court time, well, every Saturday, as far as I was concerned, well, they was horse traders out back there on the back street. And under the mill there, what we still call it the mill building, where the lower mill used to be, where Long's barber shop is, underneath there, oh my God, that thing was way higher than this ceiling. And they'd get out underneath there, and my God, that building covered a lot of space there. That was good shelter. And wasn't much air to get through under there. They had the outside of it on the side walled up, but the front of it next to the river was just open. And they'd trade horses, you know, down there under that mill during court time. And other Saturdays, if it was raining or bad, you know, like a day like this, they'd get down to that mill there. And they'd trade horses all day.
So you won the $15?
Yeah, I won the $15 and come home, and of course I had just barely enough money to pay my train fare. I think it was only about 50 cents or something like that from Clay up to Sutton, quarter or 50 cents, somewhere along there. And I wanted to take that $15 home. That was the first $15 I'd ever got a hold of. I never had a $5 bill of my own before that. And five and a ten, you know, and boy, that's big money. I brought it home, and, well, everything come out. I said, oh, that's what I expected. I said, I didn't get nothing. And they said, you ought to won something. So I finally told them, I said, well, this is going to surprise you, but I said, I got first prize. Well, and of course, they thought I was joking, eh? They didn't believe that. They all laughed. I took the $15 out and laid it down on the stand. And they knew that I didn't have any money. Well, when I laid it down there, well, of course, they knew that it had been first prize. Well, Dad, of course, Dad was concerned. He was more thrilled about winning the first prize than he was the money, the amount of money. But he said, shook his head, and he said, son, it never could have come in at a better time. He said the taxes is overdue, and the taxes was $14.85. I had 15 cents left out of my $15. And that's what he done with it. He took it down the next day and paid the taxes. Thomas, rough going back in them days, but I think back over it a lot, and I'd gladly trade what is today and what I've got today for back then. Mm-hmm. Glad to do it.
Left behind.
raised the price of the record.
Oh, yeah?
That box was right close to $288 or something. Hmm. Before that, I think $250 or $60 something like that. Hmm. So, they opened a little note and said that they'd raised the record on them, and of course they had to raise their price. So. I told him. Mike, were you here the last time? No, you wasn't with him. I told Mike, I said, got more records up there. And they said he didn't know. He thought they, maybe there was another box. And I said, well, you just put my name on that box. And so 2 or 3 days later, I got a letter and said it was mailed and done. They come over to the house. And uh-huh. I just sent the check out yesterday.
When they did that horse trading down there, mm-hmm. when they did all that horse trading down there, was there any gypsies around that?
Horse trading?
Yeah.
I don't know, I used to enjoy it. I used to get out there and listen to them lie to each other. There's a lot of them traders that kept pretty good horses. And they, down there one time, thing that I never did forget, it really touched me. Mabel's cousin, Tom Green. They was all there talking about their horses and so forth and so on. And, somebody suggested, I don't remember now who it was, suggested one of the traders there said, let's send out and get some. A bakery there in Sutton at that time, and said, let's send out to the bakery or to the store or anywhere and get us some cakes. And they probably thought that was a good idea. And so they started getting their money together. And Tom said, boys, he said, I don't have a cent. I said, I won't eat any of your cakes that you get, or any cookies, because I don't have any money to help pay for them, because I ain't got a cent. He said, when I started downtown here this morning, he said, I had a 50-cent piece in my pocket. The only penny that I had anywhere or any place to get. And he said, I met I passed a blind man out there on the street. And he said, I give him that 50 cents. He said, I'll tell you fellas all one thing. He said, whenever you see somebody that the light of the world has been shut off from him, he said, don't you be afraid if it does take the last cent you've got. Don't be afraid to give it to him, because he said, you'll be repaid. And
is that Tom Dillon?
Huh?
Who was that that said that? Who said that?
Tom Green, Mabel's cousin.
Right.
He was a trader. He was a horse trader. Uh-huh. And when they, he was just one of the traders. And when they suggested all the traders there, or one or two of them suggested they'd send out and get some cookies and cakes, you know, to piece on while it's under there trading horses. They'd do that a lot of times, or get a poke candy or something like that, you know. And they was going to pick up among them, you know, and send out and get it. And like I say, when they got around to him, he said, I don't have a cent. He said, when I come down here this morning, he said, I had a 50-cent piece. And he said, there's a blind man standing out there on the corner. And he said, I gave it to him. He said, whenever you see a man or anybody that the light of the world has been shut off from him, don't you be afraid to give him the last cent you've got. Because he said, it'll be repaid. You won't lose nothing by it. And I never did forget that. Mm. How true and how serious, you know. Yeah. And he is Mabel's cousin.
Was there any gypsies that did any trading? Hmm? Was there any gypsies that did any trading?
Gypsies?
Yeah, and around Braxton?
Well, now and then. They would be just when the gypsies, there'd be a bunch of them. You know, they used to travel clear across the country, you know.
Yeah.
My God, they distance didn't mean anything. They just got there when they got there. Yeah. It was a month or 2 months or all summer. It didn't make any difference. They just traveled through the country and traded horses, and a lot of them stole everything they'd get their fingers on. I remember when I was a kid, somebody come along and say, well, you better get your stuff and where it'll be safe. Well, there's a bunch of gypsies headed this way. They're camping so-and-so now, and they'll be through this area. And they did actually, you know, take it serious because, well, one bunch comes along, you know, maybe nicer people you never met, just like anything else. Maybe the next bunch come along would steal everything they could get a hold of. So it soon got to the places whenever gypsies was mentioned, why, that meant trouble. So they started guarding their stuff, whatever they had, you know. They'd go into your, if it was crop time, they'd go into your corn patch and pull your roasting ears and dig your potatoes, pull your beans off in your garden. Yeah, that was a common thing. During the summer, through this area, they'd... my father bought a young mare when I was just a small boy. And I thought she was the prettiest animal that I ever saw in my life. He gave $135 for that mare, and that was back there when if you worked out any place on a farm or around like that's all the work there was to be done, you got a dollar a day. Mm-hmm. And he gave $135 for that mare. And he brought her home, and he was in a timber job down right at the mouth of Wolf Creek, where Wolf Creek emptied into Elk River. Of course, that backwater covers that territory in there, mm-hmm. that's where he used to. But he had a timber job there, and he had a fellow by the name of Ben Bussey that had a sawmill, and he'd go buy a track of timber someplace, and he'd hire somebody to help him cut that timber, and hire somebody to skid it for him, and he'd saw it, and sell the lumber, and when he finished up that, why, he'd go to another. So he came home with that mare that day, and she was a fine worker. But he wasn't figuring on doing any skidding with her. He bought her for his own farm use, you know, like that. He always hired somebody with a big, heavy team to do the skidding. And my grandfather was there, and was just short before my mother passed away. And he said, I'll give anybody, I believe it was a dollar. Well, guess that mare's name. And, well, you ought to heard us guessing. And my grandfather was there, and he was just shortly, like I say, before my mother passed away. And they guessed everything, Susie and Annie and everything, every name they could think of. And my mother said, Nancy. And, well, after we all made our guess, and Dad said, well, there wasn't any of you got her name, but he said, your mom got so close to it that I'm going to give her the dollar. Her name was Fancy. Fancy. And my mother said Nancy. And so he gave my mother the dollar. And but us kids, that mare was just like a toy to us. That was the most beautiful thing that we'd ever saw in our lives. And so it was a long time before he got a hold of any saddle, and finally he got a hold. But what I was going to tell you, he gave some money to my older sister, and he said, count that. He just took it out of his pocket in a wad and just threw it down and said, count that. She counted it and was just even $100. And like I say, that was a pile of money at that day and time. And my grandfather spoke up and said, well, he said, $135 for your horse. He said, if you pay that on your horse, why, you pretty well have it. He paid you, it won't take much to pay it. Pinch pan it. Dad said, no, I got other purposes for that. He said, I've got to spend that for something else. He said, I'll pay for the mare, all right, as far as I was concerned. And so he did, of course. He, as soon as he sold some lumber, well, he took the lumber and paid for the horse. And, that's one thing that he knew. He knew the timber business. Mm. He worked in it all of his life. He worked for Curtin Company one day. He was down Sutton there. He was there. They called it a river foreman because they had a boom down there. The piers are down there. They show down there yet. I figured when they was doing the dam building and all, why they'd take them all out of there. But and I think they did say something about it, did talk something about it, but somebody down there, I think Bub Wayne maybe, Bub was born and raised down there and was just a kid when Curtin was in business down there. Mm-hmm. And Dad was, like I say, he was an expert on the river, as far as I was concerned. That's one thing he knew. And so they found out that he was a good hand on the river, so they put him in as foreman with a crew of men to float the logs down the river. And they'd cut, during the winter, they'd cut logs, and of course the chestnut and the poplar logs would float, but hardwood would sink. So they had to let them lay there a while till they'd float, but they could put them in the river. But they'd bank them along the river where they could take a crew of men along and, by God, just have a whole river full of logs there in no time at all, you know. And he'd watch the river. He knew the river. And he'd watch the river and he'd say, well, now we can make a drive. When it would come a rain, he knew just about, from the amount of rain that we had here, just about what the river would raise. And you couldn't do too much water because you'd have so much current that when it hit that boom, instead of following that boom down there to the dock where they were pulling them out, they'd have maybe a dozen pair of horses there to pull them logs out, you know, taking them out just as fast as they pulled it down in there. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't, the current would take them under the boom and they'd lost. And he'd say, well, now we can make a drive a certain time. And, you know, the logs would be drying up by that time that they would float. He had it pretty well figured out. It took so much, and according to the weather, you know, if you had a lot of rain or something during that period, but if you didn't have any rain, of course, then you could put them out sooner. But if you had rain and snow and such like, you know, in the wintertime, it was more complicated. Why? And he worked, that's what he did, the 10 years that Curtin was in business down there. And when they left down there, they wanted him to go up to what they call Curtin now, back up there in Webster County, and work for him up there, and he wouldn't go. And if he would have went up there and went to work, why, when I stayed with him, you know, why, of course, he would have retired, and maybe before we was big enough to make a log or anything like that, but there'd have been a job waiting for us if he'd stayed with our company. Well, there'd have been a job waiting for us. Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't go. He didn't want to